Hi, I'm Barb Nangle. I'm the founder of Higher Power Coaching and Consulting. I want to welcome you to my podcast, Fragmented to Whole: Life Lessons from 12-Step Recovery. On this podcast, I share my experience, strength, and hope from recovery. I don't support or endorse any particular 12-Step Recovery Fellowship, and I don't claim to speak for any of them either. My hope is that you will find my words helpful in some way, whether you're in recovery or not. This is episode 100, Voices, Music, and Readings of Recovery. Hi, everybody. I am super excited to welcome you to my 100th podcast episode. I have several guests today who you'll be hearing from momentarily. I have Isis, TJ, Kateri, and Vange. Each one of them will be sharing their experience, strength, and hope. And a couple of them will be sharing some music that they've written specifically about recovery. I want to make a bit of a disclaimer before we start. One of the things that I do when I talk publicly about recovery is I don't disclose the particular 12-step programs I'm involved in as a way to maintain my anonymity and so as not to speak for any particular 12-step program. I've asked the guests to do the same today. It's possible somebody might slip, but I just want you to know that none of us speaks for any particular 12-step program, but we're all fans of 12-step recovery in general. I'm going to open with one of the most important readings. And just because I read a piece of literature from a fellowship doesn't mean I'm a member of that fellowship. This reading, which I call Acceptance is the Answer to All My Problems, is from the AA Big Book. And it's a chapter called Acceptance Was the Answer. It's from page 417 of the fourth edition. And it says, "An acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I am disturbed, it is because I find some person, place, thing, or situation, some fact of my life unacceptable to me, and I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it is supposed to be at this moment. Nothing, absolutely nothing, happens in God's world by mistake. Until I could accept my alcoholism, I could not stay sober. Unless I accept life completely on life's terms, I cannot be happy. I need to concentrate not so much on what needs to be changed in the world, as in what needs to be changed in me and my attitudes." And I can tell you that I had been around long enough in recovery to listen up when I heard that, but I didn't know what it meant. And so what happened for me when I started to realize, oh, this is a situation where I'm not accepting, is I would say over and over and over again, acceptance is the answer to my problem. Acceptance is the answer to my problem. And what was miraculous was I found that my tension went way down just from repeating that phrase. And what that showed me was it wasn't the situation that was causing me all that stress. It was me. And it was my thoughts. And typically it meant I thought things should be going a certain way. And they weren't. So I wasn't accepting of it. And so that has been one of the greatest shifts in my recovery. I'm going to be doing a couple of more brief readings as we go along in the show, but at this point, I want to turn things over to TJ, who is going to share one of the songs that he wrote about recovery, and then he'll share his experience, strength, and hope for about 10 minutes. Take it away, TJ.
Oh, thanks, Barb. It's great to be here. It's great to see everyone. Thanks for all your help, Rev, Kev. My name is TJ, and I'm in recovery from substance use. And I chose to recover through a spiritual path that includes 12 spiritual principles that have become the cornerstone of my life. And so basically, you know, we have a really easy guidelines for how we present. You know, it's I don't know if you wanted to roll the music
totally
first,
up to you.
Or you wanted to. Yeah, so let me put it this way. I found myself hopeless, in a hopeless state of mind and body. I had a disease identify as an alcoholic. I had a disease where my mind would not prevent me from thinking about alcohol incessantly, obsessively, in one form or another, either just having to have it or I could manage it like other people do. I don't know exactly. It always manifested some way. And it basically took over my thought life until I would basically just have that first drink. And then I believe I have an allergy to alcohol. It's not like other people. Once I start, I can't stop. When I have the first drink, all bets are off. It's go time. And it's been like that since I was 11 years old. And so it's taken me to some places that are pretty bad. But anyway, health-wise, otherwise, burning my life to the ground, I did it all, you know. And the solution I found was through a 12-step program. And I'm also a lifelong musician. So in addition to having recovered, and I work at it. I work at these. I went through this program and the 12 steps with a sponsor. I have a lot of sponsees. We work on the program. I'm very active in the 12-step fellowship, and I'm also a lifelong musician. So when we all got kind of isolated through COVID, I started a project and I wrote a song in sequence, one song for each step, and put it together, a 12-song album. I call it. It's got kind of a NASA moon landing theme, and it's called 12 Small Steps for Us, One Giant Leap of Faith. And the song that I love to feature is a song called Powerless. And that's really that's about the first step. And with recovery in the recovery vehicle that I chose, the first step is to admit we're powerless over the substance and that our lives have become unmanageable. And if you look at the two sensations that happen to me, one is the obsession, and two is once I caved into the obsession and had that first drink or drug, that was it. I couldn't stop. And that was like from the first time I ever drank. It was like I never ever took a social drink. I've always drank for effect, and always manipulated the situation so I could drink to the way I wanted to and not conform to the way, polite society does, I guess. And I think, yeah, I could try it a thousand times. I try to just people who order a glass of wine at the bar before they go to the table at the restaurant and they leave the half a glass there when they go to their table. I could never do that. It was just didn't work out that. In fact, if I was watching that, I'd be fighting myself to not go finish their drink for them. It's just nuts. I'd say, in my opinion, and I'm not a doctor, but it's my opinion, it's a mental disorder. And but there's a solution. So if you're having one of those, lifetimes whereby you're just you're in incomprehensible demoralization over your inability to quit using drugs or drinking, there is a solution. If you reach out to one of these 12-step programs and you're willing to do the work, you can recover, and then things get good. So anyway, I've been a lifelong musician, written a lot of tunes, played a lot of music, toured all around, and I dedicated this next album work to the 12 steps of recovery. And the first song is a song called Powerless. And I guess we can either roll that now or Rev Kev, you want to roll that? Thanks.
Regardless of worldly success or failure, regardless of pain or joy, regardless of sickness or health or even death itself, a new life of endless possibilities can be lived if we are willing to continue our awakening through the practice of spiritual principle. Refused. Try
is coming unglued, being pummeled by life. Everything is a fight. If it just to come around, we'll get tight. Hiding our face from the light, it wasn't us, it was them. The circumstances come again and again.
Powerless, powerless.
Okay, so there it is. You know, it starts off and the song about the first step. So it basically talks about a life that's breaking apart, a life that's hitting bottom. And we often find a bottom is a great place to build a foundation, right? There's a paradox, right? A life of spiritual values is just chock full of these wonderful paradoxes. And one of them is that when we've hit our bottom, that can become an excellent foundation for building a life second to none. And then when you think about this album, I'm just trying to help anybody. You can come to my website, tjmurphymusic.com. There's all kinds of, opportunities for you to, you know, reach out for help through the website, which would be great. That's tjmurphymusic.com. And that's my purpose in life now, is to basically continuously reach out to people who are sick and suffering, and let them know that if I can find a solution, they can find a solution, because I'm absolutely no different from anyone out there who's out there suffering. And I love alcoholics and I love drug addicts. They're just beautiful, marvelous people waiting to emerge and blossom like a lotus, you know, but somehow they've been blocked, you know. And I found that I feel like I've come into an awareness that I am this infinite shaft of light, and that infinite shaft had gotten blocked along the way, and it had been fragmented and it had been blocked, and I had to clear it all out by going through these spiritual steps. And I was brought into that knowledge through somebody who walked me through the steps, my sponsor, who's a wonderful human being. And now that's what I do. I'm dedicated. I'm very active. I have, you know, multiple people that I'm doing activities with every day, whether it's reading passages from the Big Book or working on step work or helping service at meetings. You know, I have a meeting here in New Hampshire called Zoomigos. You can find it on Intergroups. Zoomigos was born of the COVID virus, and we run 7 days a week. We run a full format of the 12-step recovery and for substance misuse, and it's just grown. It started with like eight of us, and we would like take turns sharing, and now every night there's like between 50 and 75 people. And just beautiful to watch people. I have people who've never been to an in-person peer support meeting, who are now not only recovered, which is wonderful, but they've also been through the steps and are now sponsoring other people. And this is all within a year. I mean, if you're willing, everything can change very quickly. So we have people who come in who've blown their lives up, and it's just like, and just like me, and all I do is talk to them about what happened to me, and they can identify with it because it's happening to them. And then together we recover. Like, this is a group, and this is what I love about peer support and 12-step recovery programs, is that there's two major components that really make it work. One is that shared spiritual values. You know, we basically surrender our disbelief and everything else and just open up to the universe and ask to align with it. Whatever spirit of your misunderstanding you want to grab, it could be a light beam to the 10th dimension. Great. If that's what's going to help you stay sober, then you can surrender to it. And the other thing is social cohesion. We do this together. We do it in the now. We're very, 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 very into the right now, this second. Not tomorrow, not yesterday, but right this minute. And so those two things together as a group, we recover together. So anyway, that's my primary purpose. That's what this album's about. That's why I'm here. I have an artist on the album, Katarina Rooney. I want to make a shout out to her because she's done some great work. She drew all kinds of cool people in spacesuits, children, babies, cherubs, people meditating, people playing instruments, beautiful women, beautiful men, all floating around space, recovered in their spacesuits. So that's kind of cool. These masks behind me are I'm using them for my next video, which is the third step called I Surrender. The choir will be wearing these masks. I'm rolling up on about 10 minutes. Who else like to shout out? I want to just make sure I thanked our host, Barb. I love HP Coach. I think it's great. I wish you all the power in the world, and I appreciate everyone being here today. And if you ever need me, you can always reach me at tjmurphymusic.com, and I'm happy to listen to understand. Thank you.
Thank you so much, TJ. I really appreciate that. I loved how you talked about the two components of the program. I've never heard it quite that way before. I am going to invite Isis to share next. Take it away, Isis.
Thanks, Barb. Thanks, everyone. My name is Isis, and I am in recovery. Let me get my timer started. I think I'm going to dive right into the poem that I wrote for today. I hope that it captures recovery for me, for you, maybe. Okay. One, I awaken. The sound of birds awakens me, pains me. Everything hurts. My very existence hurts every single day. I must numb this hurt, every hurt, lest it all drown me, consume me, lest someone find out about this hurt. And so I numb this hurt and every hurt. To move hurts, to love hurts, to hate hurts, everything hurts. And so I numb everything. Two, you may find my numbing problematic, but I assure you, this facade allows me to live. With this facade, I can face anything, anyone. No pain will faze me. No terror will frighten me. No evil will consume me. I can face anything with this facade. 3. My purpose is to write. I live to write. I live for my spectators. And so I live seeking. Constantly I search, I seek a story, a new adventure, a new poem. All I seek is poetry. All I do is seek poetry. What could be more poetic than that? A whisper deep within cries out, screams. What could be sadder than that? I close the door on that whisper, slam it shut, lock it, arm myself with the key. All I seek is poetry. All I do is seek poetry. What could be more poetic than that? 4. I hear a whisper. You don't have to live like this. I scoff, as if I had a choice. If I had a choice, why would anyone choose what I have? Why would anyone choose hurt? Why would anyone choose this pain? I wish I didn't need to numb everything. 5. I hear a whisper. You don't have to live like this. My confusion persists. My resistance persists. But slowly, ever so slowly, something begins to open. The door cracks open ever so slightly, ever so slightly. The air changes. The air feels different. This air feels different. What is this difference? What is this feeling? I don't numb it. I sit. Still in the dark room where I've numbed every feeling I've ever had. Still in the dark. And in the stillness, I see a sliver of light. What is this light? I try to be subtle. My fear requires me to be subtle, lest the beast return and catch me by surprise, lest I put down every numbing agent only to be thrown into still more hurt, endless hurt, with no solution. I millimeter toward the sliver of light. The light grows, becomes warmth. I feel the warmth upon my skin. I feel the warmth on my skin. This warmth, what warmth is this? I begin to inch closer, step closer, walk, run, leap, bound toward this warmth. 6. I begin to hear rumors, whispers of this thing called acceptance. It sounds like something I'd enjoy. How can I get this thing? From someplace unknown, the answer comes. Seek. And so I learn to seek. Where before I sought a story, a new adventure, a new poem, now I seek myself, my story. I seek understanding, growth, acceptance. I work toward what I seek, and what I seek, I find time and time again. 7. I awaken to warmth. Deep warmth awakens me. I have worked for this warmth, this light. I have shed the need to numb. I have shed the desperate need to numb every feeling. Instead, with warmth embracing me, I feel, I feel, I feel. 8. I feel joy. At first, I felt just a sliver of happiness, and it, like the warmth, grew and grew. This happiness became joy, and I walked, ran, leapt, bounded, worked toward this joy. 9. I feel love for myself. I am enough. In fact, I am incredible. I am worthy. I am loved. Ooh, that was my first time reading that out loud, and I definitely nearly started crying.
Yeah, I have tears in my eyes. I got chills down my back several times.
Wow. For me, that really, you know, describes the journey from beginning to present. I won't say end, because I have the gift of getting to continue enjoying and experiencing this warmth, this growth, this love for the rest of my life, you know. And part of the importance of going to meetings is to remember that I don't have to do any of this alone, that I get to do this with others. And in doing this with others, I also get reminded of why I'm doing it. And you know, because my life can be so beautiful today that I sometimes forget how hard it was, how much I did, you know, feel this need to numb. Connecting with others helps me remember both parts, right? Why I'm doing it, both what I get to leave behind and what I get to grow towards. And it's such a gift to be able to be present for my own life today, for the lives of my loved ones. It's absolutely incredible, you know. And I think the beauty of this podcast is that it really captures and shares the gifts of recovery, regardless of the program. And I think we all stand to gain something from 12-step recovery, regardless of who we are. Mm. It's really such a gift. I have a minute and a half left, but I feel like I've said what I needed to say. Thank you so much for having me.
What a privilege to have your voice out loud for the first time reciting that incredible poem. I sincerely hope that you will publish it somewhere, because that was just so, so deep and moving. And I don't care who the person is. I don't see how they could listen to that and not be moved. I thank you so much. And it's been such a blessing to watch your journey of recovery, Isis. And I'm so grateful for your friendship. All right. So I have two more brief readings that I want to share. One of them is from the AA 12 and 12. For those of you who are not familiar, the long title is Alcoholics Anonymous 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. And this is out of step 10. This is on page 90. It is a spiritual axiom that every time we are disturbed, no matter what the cause, there is something wrong with us. What I understand that to mean is not nobody did anything and there's nothing wrong. What I understand that to mean is if I am disturbed and I wish to be undisturbed, then I'm in charge of making that happen. I used to try to control other people to stop doing or being whatever they were being so that I could be undisturbed. And this is where the serenity prayer comes in. I've gotten the wisdom to know the difference between what I can and cannot change. And what I can change is me and my thinking and my behavior and my attitudes. So if I wish to be undisturbed, and I do, then what do I need to do to adjust in this situation? And then the other reading is called Voices of Recovery. This is from September 5th reading, and I think that I may have bought this on September 5th because I was at a convention, and it hit me between the eyes. And it starts with, clearly, if we were going to remain abstinent and feel serenity, we had to learn better ways of dealing with other people, ways that would bring us joy instead of pain. And this is a quote from the 12 and 12 of Overeaters Anonymous. And the day's reading is this. Learning better ways of dealing with other people is a lifelong process and a challenge. Yet I've learned things in OA that have helped. The first is acceptance. I had all sorts of expectations about others' ability and behavior. I expected people to be competent, capable, and productive. I expected them to behave rationally and to be true to their word. These are my expectations for myself, and I've had to let go of them for others. I'm still disappointed when someone doesn't follow through on a commitment, but I don't let it ruin my serenity. I've also learned that I don't have to prove that I'm right. I can silently agree to disagree. I put aside my pride, acknowledge another's point by saying, "You may be right," and gracefully walk away from the situation. Finally, I look for the good in people. Sometimes it requires quite a stretch, but the stretch is worth it. Focusing on the bad brings pain. The joy comes in finding the good. I'd rather have the joy. Now, the reason this was so important for me was because at the time I was working for someone I had worked with for, I think at that point, 17 years. And I understood I needed to accept that she didn't follow through, she was unreliable, etc. And I remember saying to my sponsor, who I got the same weekend that I got this, you know, I get that I need to accept that, but I think it's reasonable to expect in a professional setting for someone to do what they say they're going to do, to follow through, to have, you know, reasonable estimates of time, etc. And she said, "Barb, what's reasonable is to let the boss be the boss. So if she changes up what the expectations are and doesn't tell you, then you just have to deal with it." And I realized that my pain in that situation was I expected people to be competent, capable, and productive. And it's perfectly fine for me to have that expectation for myself. But if I'm going to have that expectation for other people, I'm going to be fucking miserable much of the time. And so I could have gotten out of that situation 16 years prior, but it didn't even occur to me. Instead, I stayed, I suffered, and I complained, and I talked about her behind her back because I got to blame her for my problem. And so this reading has been one of the most important readings for me and really seeing my part in things. And I would say that for me, of all of the incredible gifts of recovery, understanding my part in things has been by far the greatest gift. So now we're going to move on to Vange. So Vange has written a whole bunch of songs, but she's written a couple about recovery that she's going to share today. So we're going to have her share one song and her experience, Strength and Hope, now, and then we'll come back to her sharing another song after that. So take it away, Vange.
Hi, everybody. My name is Vange Durst. I want to first thank Barb, my dear friend, for inviting me to this amazing celebration anniversary of her podcast. I have listened to your podcast at 2 a.m, walking on the Merritt Parkway in freezing weather. And I have listened to your podcast walking along the beautiful sunlit beach. And no matter where I am, every single one of your episodes brings me, you know, it brings me comfort. I feel like I'm not alone. I learned something. And so, you know, I'm very grateful for you, and I'm just glad to have you in my life. And again, I thank you for inviting me here today. I want to thank everybody. What I've heard has just been wonderful. The music, the poetry. A little bit about myself. I've been in recovery for many years. My parents were both alcoholics, so I'm a double winner. And my early life was a lot of just kind of being anxious all the time and confused and kind of like a piece of flotsam, you know, just sort of banging around the system, you know, in the water and whatever the situation I was in, and finding myself in a lot of unmanageable situations. And also finding that I had a real talent for accepting unacceptable behavior and trying to make it okay in others and myself. And that created a lot of discomfort. That's actually the first song. I have done some CDs. I've done about 7 CDs in my lifetime, usually with other artists. This CD, the newest CD, which came out in December, is called Kick-Ass Woman. And that's me kicking ass on guitar, jamming my ass off on guitar, which is one of my favorite things to do. And, you know, the funny thing is before I got sober, I really thought I was like, oh, I'm such a great player. And, you know, I'd be rushing all up and down the neck and, you know, this and that. And the beauty of recovery is that I was able to step back and actually look at myself and not just be this anxious mess, you know, playing music to look for praise or admiration or, you know, whatever that, you know, some of the goal was, but I could actually get under why I adore and love music so very much and what I really want to do with music and how I am with music is very much like I am with everything and everybody. And that was a huge gift. That was a wonderful gift to get me like just in my, you know, feet on the ground, right sized in my life with my art, and a huge blessing. And the first song you're going to hear, Getting Better, was a lot about that. And the refrain, the chorus is, you know, because when I think, I get the blues because my thinking ain't right. And that says it all, because in, you know, in recovery, once I put the substances down, there was still a lot of issues because of me, because of my reactions, responses to everything happening around me. And it's been a lot of work and incredibly gratifying work in not one only 12-step program, but I found that I needed like a couple at least. So that's been the more the merrier, I say, you know, I mean, that's just, you know, been a big part of my understanding that my thoughts are pretty much everything that causes my my reality. So, you know, I can wake up in the morning in just a shitty mood. And then if I track my thoughts, I'm like, oh, wait a minute. You had this thought right before you woke up that, oh, you're not good enough, or you're not a good grandma, or you weren't a good mother, whatever the story is. It's like my, you know, here it starts coming in. And so the beauty of that is that I can track it and reframe it and take some breaths. And I love that you spoke about the acceptance paragraph, Barb, in the beginning of this podcast, because that's everything also to me, because I find that I can react, you know, pretty quickly. And especially with like somebody that I have intimacy with, like my spouse, because intimacy and I were like, we were not good friends. I mean, you know, I thought I was like great. Well, I thought I was a great lover and everything, you know, I'm this, I'm all that. I'm like, you know, I'm so whatever. And then I get in a long-term, deep, intimate relationship. And I was just like, what? Like, and then I was starting to get reactive. And so there was more work. And the good thing is that I didn't put stuff into my body to rationalize, justify my own bad behavior or my own, not bad, but just unacceptable that, that I'd grown up with. I was able to move through that. And, you know, I'm so grateful for that because, you know, I've been married for some years now, which would have been a complete impossibility. Okay. I would probably not be here. I'd probably be dead. I wouldn't be married. I wouldn't be sitting here on this podcast. And I wouldn't be out down here, you know, going out and playing for people, playing songs that they enjoy hearing, and, you know, making some nice side money and having retired at the age of 62 because I was in recovery. So all of that is because I came into recovery over 24 years ago. And I was able to create a life beyond my wildest dreams. And then this the next song you'll hear is it's called Road to Damascus. And a very dear friend of mine, Maureen Shore, wrote this wonderful poem. And I was just playing around with it and I tweaked it a little bit, not very much. The essence of the poem is about surrender, you know, because the song is about, you know, Paul on the road to Damascus. And, you know, it doesn't matter that neither she nor I are, you know, super into the Christian faith, you know, Jesus is wonderful, etc. But the whole parable of Paul on the road to Damascus, she brilliantly brought it into, you know, into it being a story in this song of recovery and of surrender. And that's been huge because I find in my recovery, if I don't surrender, I suffer. And that could happen many times on a daily basis. Like for me, it's probably about 10 at least, where, you know, I'll be dealing with some shittiness because, you know, I don't come from easy people and I'm not easy people. If I was easy people, you know, I wouldn't have had to be in 2 12-step programs and therapy, et cetera, et cetera. I'm grateful for who I am and what I've become. And a lot of that has to do with being able to surrender and accept on a daily basis that that I can move through something quickly, I can accept it, I can own my part of it, and I can just then move forward and then be in the joy of the day and be in the moment of the day. So, you know, I think that's probably it for me. I just want to thank all of you for being here. And Barb, I love you. And I thank you for being a mainstay in my life. You are like the rock of Gibraltar for me. You're my Barb. So, and I'll never forget the conversations we had. I'm out on the highway. You're in your broken down caravan somewhere. And just great memories. So anyway, and I want to thank all of you. I want to thank you, Kev, for your service. It's good to be here. So thank you.
Thanks, Vand. What Vand is referring to is in the fall of 2018, I took a 6-week solo road trip in a camper van, mostly out west. And the first 2.5 weeks, my van broke down so many times that it saw 4 different mechanics, one of whom it saw 3 times. And the owner put over $2,000 worth of repairs into it. I ended up ditching it and getting another van. But because I was often 2 or 3 time zones away and Vans was working overnight on a road crew and could talk on the phone, I'd be talking to her and she's like, yay, I have a human to talk to. And so we talked a lot during that time and I needed it. I needed the support. So thank you so much, Vans. I appreciate that. I love you too. And you're a mainstay of my recovery. Actually, I feel the need to share this. In one of my programs that is not a program that Vand is in, my sponsor had a relapse. And I was pretty flipped out, as you can imagine. I think I was not even 2 years into recovery in that program. And I was like, who do I talk to about it? And then Vand came in and sat down next to me at a meeting. And I was like, that's who I need to talk to. And it was beautiful what she said to me. You know, here's what you say. I heard this, and you stop talking and you let him speak. And she also like helped me figure out what to say the day I was going to talk to him. She called me before we went over it again. She prayed with me, which nobody had ever done anything like that with me before. It was an incredible blessing. And then she talked to me after I had the conversation with him. And like, that was a life-changing moment for so many reasons. So thank you so much.
Hold me when twilight breaks.
At this point, I would like to turn it over to Kateri. So, Kateri, take it away.
All right. Can you hear me okay?
We can.
All right. Perfect. Kulamausi, Kateri, and Dinawethe. That means hello. My name is Kateri in my native language. My name is Kateri. I'm a person in long-term recovery. I'm from the Mohican Nation, and so I just shared a greeting from my traditional language with you guys. So just to start and share a little bit about my background, you know, growing up as a kid, I come from a really good family, and they were very loving, and I kind of grew up around the rooms. So my dad was in a 12-step fellowship. And we would always have people from this fellowship over at our house, you know, so I'd be growing up and they'd be out in the garage smoking and, you know, telling stories or having meetings or whatever. And my mom would always come out and bring them coffee and whatnot. And when I was young, my parents got divorced and I didn't really get to see my dad a lot. He traveled for work. And I always felt really out of place with who I was. So I'm a native person. I identify as native, but I'm mixed race. And, you know, sometimes I felt like, you know, I was too native for white people or too white for native people. And so I grew up being really, really shy and quiet. And I had an older sister. I actually have a lot of siblings, but one of my older sisters, she would always talk for me when I was little. So they would say, oh, what's your name? Her name's Kateri. How old are you? Oh, she's 3. And so I didn't really grow up like knowing how to use my own voice and for a long time. And I got bullied as a kid for being shy. And I got bullied as a kid for being really poor. We grew up really poor. And so as I started to grow up into my teenage years, I started using alcohol to start. And what I found was that it made me feel like I was more outgoing and could get out of my shell. It made me feel like I could connect to people. It made me feel like I could make friends. And, you know, I liked that feeling because that's what I was looking for, was that human connection. But as I turned to be about 16, I started to get into meth. And one day, it was actually my dad. He works for this national organization. And he had told me a story about how he was going to walk across the United States from Los Angeles to Washington, D.C. And the purpose of this journey was to help raise awareness for domestic violence on women and children. And I remember when he very first told me this story about how he was going to go on this journey. And he said, "What do you think?" And I said, "I think you're crazy," is what I think. Well, here I am at 16, you know, I'm going on about a year of being addicted to meth. And he didn't really know what was going on with me, but he knew something was going on with me. So he looked at me and he said, "Pack your bags, we leave in 2 days." So what I did is I left. I actually dropped out of school to go on this walk across the United States. And I didn't really tell a whole lot of people that I was going, except for some close friends and family members. So for the next 3.5 months, we literally walked from Los Angeles to Washington, D.C. And the journey took 109 days, and we pretty much slept in tents the whole time. We would set up in camp, and we would walk or run by day, and then we would set up camp at night. And we would have what's called talking circles. Every single night, we would have these talking circles. And it was really the first time in my life that I got to be surrounded by people who knew the culture and people who were in recovery. And so, you know, when we had started that walk, I was 2 days sober and going through withdrawals from meth, and nobody knew it. So I was detoxing on my own and, you know, trying to figure out life. As I'm sure all of you remember, you know, that feeling when you first got into recovery. But, you know, there's people on that walk. It completely changed my life. And, you know, they changed my life. Their words that they shared changed my life. And some of them, I'll never even know their names, but I remember the words that they shared with me and, you know, how they spoke about their lives and recovery. And I thought, you know, I want that too. You know, that's what I wanted for my life. Because, you know, before I went on the walk, there was kind of two low points that I really hit that I knew that I was getting out of control. And so one was, is when my older sister was pregnant and, you know, I was mouthing off to my mom and I didn't really normally do that. And so she kind of called me out on it, but the way that she did is I was going to go take off in my car because me and my mom got in a fight and she jumped on the hood of my car and she started yelling at me and she's pregnant, you know, on the hood of my car. And it made me kind of like have this realization, like, whoa, what are you doing? You know, that's not okay. This is not who you are. And the other one was an argument that my mom and I had gotten into where, you know, we didn't grow up in a family where we swore around at each other a whole lot. But in this argument, I remember I was trying to take off and she had actually kicked my legs out from under me. And I was standing outside of our house, you know, and all the neighbors could hear and she sat on me and I was like sitting there screaming bloody murder. You know, and when she had kicked my legs out from under me like that, I looked her in the eye and I said, and excuse my language, but I said, "Fuck you, bitch." And it was like this realization inside that was like, again, this is not who you are, you know. And I had probably wrote my mom after that point, like 20 letters begging her to put me in treatment, but I just never had the courage to give them to her. So, you know, I went on this walk instead. And what came to me and like what was my realization and what was missing from me is my culture and the things that I learned along this path. And I remember one night we were in Albuquerque and we were staying at this tribal college called SIPI. And along this journey, we had carried with us a crimson silhouette of domestic violence survivors. And they had these gold hearts on them. And it would say their name, their age, how they died, and what happened to their perpetrator. Well, there was this little girl that we carried with us all on this way, and her name was Brandy Jo, and she was 6 years old. And we told her story everywhere that we went. So this one night, we're staying the night in the college, and I slept by her in my sleeping bag. And I just remember that it was the very first time that I opened my heart up to my higher power. It was the very first time that I decided to pray. And I didn't grow up, you know, having a higher power in my life. I didn't believe in a creator. I didn't believe in any of that. So for me to make that move and open myself up and say, okay, I can accept you into my life. It was a very powerful moment for me. And so being able to, you know, carry teachings from my culture, and I'm still learning, but it gave me a lot of gifts in my recovery. And during that journey, I attended my first 12-step meeting. And, you know, I was 16 years old, and most of the people in the meeting were like older, you know, white men. And they were talking about losing their house and losing their family and their spouse and stuff. Those weren't things that I could relate to. So I didn't connect to that particular fellowship for a really long time because, like, that this doesn't apply to me. But later in my recovery, you know, I became a little bit more open. But as the journey started to come to a close, I got really scared, you know, because I knew I was going home, and I didn't really know what was waiting for me on the other side, because I had just disappeared on a lot of people. I had a lot of people that were going to ask questions, and I didn't know how to behave, you know, because I dealt with all of my emotions and the things that I experienced in my life through drugs and through drinking. And so it's like, I remember my first New Year's Eve, you know, home, and I was sober, and I'm like, what do you even do for your, like, what do you do for these kinds of holidays? Like, the year before, you know, I was partying my butt off, and, you know, I can't even really remember it too good. But so I had a cousin who had gotten into treatment, and she had gotten out of treatment right about the same time that I got home. And so we got to be sober together too, because we had been partying before. And we're like, we don't know what we're going to do. We're just going to, like, take some toilet paper and tear it up as confetti and throw it in there and be like, happy new year, you know? And so it was just the matter of, like, trying to figure out how to adjust to life on life's terms, and how to do that in a sober and healthy way. And, you know, back then we didn't have a lot of, like, young people meetings or anything like that. So it felt very lonely, but it was better than what I was doing before. And then I started to make some connections, you know, as I grew stronger into my recovery, to people that were in recovery too. But, you know, the issues that I was facing as a young person was more around, like, peer pressure and family and, you know, just how to, you know, deal with being in school and actually going, you know, those were the things that I was dealing with. I wish that I could sit here and say, oh, from that day forward, I never used anything ever again. Unfortunately, that was not, you know, how my path went. It wasn't always smooth or graceful. But I'm proud to say that next month I'll actually be celebrating 9 years of continuous sobriety for the first time in my life. So I'm pretty excited about that. And, you know, if it weren't for my recovery, let me tell you what it gave me. I am now a proud mother of two beautiful children. I have a wonderful supportive partner. I get the honor of serving for the very organization that saved my life. And I cannot tell you what that means to me, because I made a commitment, you know, when I first started to pray, that I would spend my life helping others find the miracle of recovery, because I want to honor those that came before me, and I want to honor those who gave the gifts that they gave to me. So that's what I'll make a commitment of doing. But, you know, some of the teachings that we learned, that I learned, you know, their cultural teachings that were really important for me in my recovery, is that there's four seasons of recovery. So we get a lot of our teachings from nature. Spring, summer, fall, winter is kind of how those seasons go, right? So in the springtime, it's like, if you take an oak tree, you look at an oak tree, the sap is just starting to come in, you know, it's a time of new beginnings. What happens is that you start to see these buds, you know, on this tree. So you can actually equate some of these teachings to recovery. So what happens in recovery is that, you know, you're accepting a higher power into your life. You see a new life force that's starting to take shape. In the summertime, the oak tree, what happens is, you know, the leaves start to form and unfold, and the tree starts to take shape. So it's about, like, maturing. In recovery, what happens is things are starting to settle down, you know, people are starting to notice the changes in you. in the fall time, what happens to the oak tree is that the fruit starts to come in, right? And it's a time of harvesting. It's a time that the leaves are starting to change and you notice the beauty. Well, in recovery is the same. You know, you notice the beauty and recovery, the benefits of recovery, and life is good. Well, then what happens is there's a winter season and, you know, there's like to the oak tree, there's a gust of wind, you know, and the temperature starts to change and you start to lose some leaves and things like that. And as time goes on, then suddenly you're bare, right? And exposed and vulnerable. Well, in recovery, what happens is that things start to feel challenging and you start to feel like things don't make sense the same way and that you lose your sense of purpose and identity. So during this time, what happens is that you begin to try and seek the answers for three questions. Who am I? Why am I? And where am I going? So what it is it's a time of renewal. It's a time for growth. It's a time to make room for the expansion of the branches and the leaves. And so what happens is that, you know, each season takes 1 year. And so you'll notice in recovery, when people start to struggle, it's like between years 3 and 4, 7 and 8, you know, 11 and 12. Those are when things start to struggle, but it's like a natural cycle that happens. And so that's one of the teachings that I learned from my culture and that I apply to my recovery, because it's important for me to have an understanding of what season I am, because it helps me to navigate my recovery process that way. The other thing that I learned is that, you know, conflict is very natural. It's actually, even though it's hard, it's like a guidance. It's a feedback system that tells you that something is out of harmony. And so what I had learned is that conflict precedes clarity. And boy, did I have a lot of conflict in my life and everything before I got into recovery. And, you know, even now that I am in recovery, too, you know, there's conflicts that happen. Like a couple of years ago, you know, I lost a niece who was born on my birthday. She was very young, 18 years old, and we lost her to heroin. And so what I learned from that is that even in my recovery, even, you know, through going to meetings and having my sponsor and stuff, things are still going to happen that are challenging. And that recovery knows no bound. Addiction knows no bounds. It knows no earth suit. It knows no, you know, income level. It crosses every barrier, but so does recovery. And so I learned that through, you know, the loss is that, you know, recovery is still possible no matter who you are. So anyway, I'm sure I'm probably over my time now, but I just wanted to thank you guys for allowing me the opportunity to share a little bit about my story, to share a little bit about some of the teachings that I've learned that have been helpful for me in my recovery. And I want to close this off with a prayer that I learned, which is, Creator, thank you for what you've given me. Thank you for what you have taken from me. And thank you for what you've left me with.
Beautiful. Kateri, I wonder if you wouldn't mind taking a moment and talking about the Wellbriety organization for folks that don't know about it.
Oh, sure. So for anybody that doesn't know about it, White Bison is a Native American nonprofit organization based out of Colorado Springs. And what we do is we provide culturally based programs and trainings and resources that are mostly dedicated towards recovery and prevention of addiction. And our mission is creating and sustaining a grassroots Wellbriety movement that provides culturally based healing to the next 7 generations of Indigenous people. For anybody who is not familiar with what Wellbriety is in the Wellbriety movement, basically what it means is living a sober life that is balanced emotionally, mentally, physically, and spiritually. It's about whole person wellness. So the analogy that we like to give is, let's just say you got a jerk and he's drinking and all he does is quit drinking. Well, he's sober, but he's still a jerk. So we have to focus on healing and wellness in all of those different areas. And so we take that approach in all of the mm-hmm. different programs that we have to offer for adult mm-hmm. treatment and recovery, youth treatment and recovery, youth prevention. Mm-hmm. We have them for whole family wellness, healthy fatherhood, healthy motherhood, and then programs that focus on healing from grief and trauma. And we have a reentry program for people coming out of incarceration or treatment back into the community.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. I first heard about the Wellbriety movement because I read an article on Medium, and I think it was called something like, the first step is admitting something about that you're privileged in 12-step recovery. And one of the things it mentioned was that the white people, Dr. Bob and Bill, get credit for the first time that masses of people were able to recover from alcoholism. Meanwhile, there have been sober circles in Native communities since the 1750s. And I read about the Native American, the Wellbriety movement there. And I also heard, you know, points of view of people of color in recovery and how just the ridiculous overt racism that they experienced. And so I did a little bit of research about Wellbriety. I found White Bison. I started following on Instagram. And now I also receive the Daily Elders Meditation. And it's part of, it's one of my daily readings every single morning. And it really appeals to me. Before I was a spiritual person, I do remember thinking, because I didn't understand how, the wide variety of human religions, and I didn't understand what spirituality was, I remember thinking, the people who worship nature, like there's something there for me. And I loved the teaching that you shared about the seasons of recovery. It really resonates like in my body to hear that. So thank you so much for sharing that. I appreciate that. And thank you for your service to the community and to the world.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I do want to wrap things up, and I'm going to deviate from what's on the script. Not that anybody cares but me, but I want to end with a brief little story, and that is about my desire to be a podcaster. I think it's really appropriate after we have the musicians and the poets, et cetera, on this show. And this story wove together for me over the last few weeks. I have been doing Ziva meditation. And one of the things that Emily Fletcher, who created Ziva Meditation, talks about is that our desires were put into us by nature. And they're not ours. And they will come out somewhere in the world. And that idea has been percolating in my head. And it made me realize that when I started listening to books on tape, which was actually when they were cassette tapes over 30 years ago, as soon as I started doing it, I knew immediately I want to narrate audiobooks. I've wanted to do that for decades. And in 2018, I was working in a co-working place and I met a woman who was narrating audiobooks. And I was like, oh my God, how did you figure out how to do that? So she said, read this book, you'll figure out all the things. So I got the headphones, I got the microphone, I downloaded Audacity, I started working on figuring it out. Meanwhile, Rev Kev approaches me about doing sales and marketing for the podcast he's going to start doing. And I was like, no, but you know what? I think I want to do a podcast. So I started doing the podcast. And the first, I think, three episodes, I actually went downtown to New Haven to his studio, Baobab Tree Studios, and recorded. And meantime, I'm working on doing the audiobooks. I created a studio in my basement. And after about 3 weeks, I said to him, listen, I have a studio in my basement. Can I just record it and send it to you? And because it would save us both time. He doesn't have to sit there and listen to me and then go back and produce it. And I don't have to drive downtown and do all that stuff. So I started doing the podcast. And not long after, I realized narrating audiobooks is not for me. There's so little time doing the reading and so much of the other work that just wasn't for me. And what I realize now is that the universe planted the desire for me to podcast 30 something years ago. But because podcasting didn't even exist, the technology didn't exist, it disguised that desire as something I could recognize, which was narrating audiobooks. So I want you to know, people, that if you have a desire to do something, it's not crazy. Do it. And I feel like my recovery has opened me up. Somebody in this call said, you know, opening up to the spirit, you know, of the universe. And I feel like that's, you know, really what's happened for me. And it has allowed me to not really care what people think about what I want to do and how I want to be in the world. As long as I am living by my spiritual principles and I feel like I'm living in my integrity, then what I do is really just my business and nobody else's. And I don't need to I can take people's opinions into consideration, but I used to care way more what other people thought of me than what I think of me. And, of course, I still care what people think of me, but I care more that I am an honest woman of integrity who lives by your spiritual principles. With that being said, I want to thank every single one of you for coming on the show. What a privilege to be here with you all, to hear your stories. I have gotten tears in my eyes so many times from every one of your stories. It's been such a blessing. And with that, I'll close. And remember, everybody, healing is possible. It's never too late to recover. And no one is beyond hope. Talk to you next week. That's it for today. Please share this episode with anyone who might find it helpful. If you like what you've heard here, you might be interested in private coaching with me. If that sounds like you, then head on over to barbchat.net, or you can get on my calendar for a free 20-minute consultation to help you make lasting changes in your life, like I've made deep, lasting changes in my life. My ideal client is someone who is ripe for change, but I'll coach anyone who wants to be happy, joyous, and free. So if that's you, then go to barbchat.net and get on my calendar. I'd love to chat with you. Please like and subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast outlet. This helps other people find me. Thanks for listening.